introduced his sermon with a reading from Khalil Gibran on love. "Then," said Almitra, "speak to us of love." And he raised his head and looked upon the people, and there fell the stillness upon them. And with a great voice he said, "When love beckons to you, follow him, though his ways are hard and steep. And when his wings enfold you, yield to him, though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you. And when he speaks to you, believe him, though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden. For even as love crowns, so shall he crucify you. And even as he is for your growth, so he is for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in their clinging to the earth. Like sheaves of corn, he gathers you unto himself. He threshes you to make you naked. He sifts you to free you from your husks, and he grinds you to whiteness. He kneads you until you are pliant, and then he assigns you to his sacred fire that you may become sacred bread for God's sacred feast. All these things shall love do unto you, that you may know the secrets of your heart, and in that knowledge become a fragment of God's heart. But if you fear, you would seek only love's peace and love's pleasure. Then it is better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's threshing floor into the seasonless world, where you shall laugh, but not all your laughter. Weep, but not all your tears. Love gives not but itself and takes not but from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed. For love is sufficient unto love. And when you love, you shall not say, 'God is in my heart,' but rather, 'I am in the heart of God.' And think not you can direct the course of love. For love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course. Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires: to melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody at night, to know the pain of too much tenderness, to be wounded by your own understanding of love, and to bleed willingly and joyfully, to wake at dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving, to rest at the noon hour and meditate love's ecstasy, to return home at eventide with gratitude, and then to sleep with a prayer for the beloved of your heart and a song of praise on your lips."
Thank you, Norm. I was going to start differently today, but I'm going to start with the arch. I have the bad habit of improvising when I do this sort of thing, so I need to find my cues from where they start. So, you know how an archway was built in ancient Rome or other places? They would start from the ground and they would build the arch up until it nearly met, and there would be supports underneath. But right at the end, when it was about to meet and they'd slid the last stone in and mortared it, the architect would stand in the archway underneath the cornerstone or the head of the arch. And then they would take the supports away. You gotta love what you do for a living to do that. But this is taken as a kind of grammar of love in some respects. Right? The arch holds together by a certain mathematics, but it holds together by a dependence and an interdependence of all of its parts. No single one could be removed. And you guys may have done this at the old Discovery Center. It was like the funnest thing. You pull it up and bam, there it all goes. Because without the single piece in its right place, the whole falls apart. And that is... Well, I suppose I could just stop there and sit down, but I do have a few more minutes to speak. That is sort of the essence of what I'd like to try and say today. That love, at least in the way that I've come to understand it, is consistently and unceasingly and sometimes unsettlingly more than a feeling. Some of you may have the beginning of that song by Boston in your head, and that's fine. The sense of this is that love is a feeling, first off. We have a troublesome problem in English that we have one word for love. One of my favorite languages, Greek, has a full complement of four words for love. So storge would be the base level, right? The sort of feeling of, okay, we'll put up with this. Storge might be what some of you are offering to me right now. Like, all right, yeah, I'll go along with this for a minute. We can get along together. Then we would, if we managed to make a real connection, we might develop philia between us, right? The quality of friendship, the sense of enjoying each other's company, wanting to find ourselves in common causes, common places, common conversations. That builds communities. I imagine many of you possess this as a binding fabric between you, that philia, that sense of being interested in what the other's saying and concerned about their welfare at some level. Right? The Greeks would say, in between this and the highest love falls eros, what we would often call desire rather than love. So where storge could be for, you know, your sports team or your workplace or the guy talking at you, and philia would be for your friends and close people, eros is for only a very few things. The passions in your life. Right, standing under the arch. That requires a certain eros for your work to do that. It also applies to persons to whom we have what we now understand to be called a frankly erotic connection. So it has a number of dimensions in that field of wanting, in some sense, the full possession of the object of desire. But should we stop there, we would become either excessive or defective in our love. Obsessed or cold. The fullness, at least the ancient Greeks, Plato and the others, would teach us, the fullness of love is called agape. It's love beyond feeling. And it's the most sublime and the tenderest kind of love, the kind of love that Khalil Gibran was talking about, that will pick you up in its pinions and pierce you as it does it. That sort of love is embodied, well, maybe best in the words of Arthur C. Clarke. I don't know if you guys are science fiction people, but if I get through this entire sermon without mentioning Star Trek more than right now, it's going to be great. But Arthur C. Clarke, who is in really nowhere related to Star Trek, says, love is when the well-being of another is integral to your own. When the well-being of another is integral to your own. And I imagine that if you look around the room right now, you may find a number of people with whom you share that connection as well. It's a deep and it's a subtle connection. And it can pervade all of those other types of love. So, I wanted to illustrate it a little bit. So, as Norm said, I've done a bunch of things, and currently, right now, I work as a staff chaplain at the Victoria General Hospital. I work in palliative care and oncology, and a number of other places. And so, many of the journeys with which I have the privilege to be involved are difficult. Whatever their end point, There are hard times both behind and ahead, and often in the present. But in the midst of those situations, certain themes tend to get foreground. Meaning, relationships, and love are the three that come out most strongly for the greatest number of people. And I'd gotten comfortable with this notion, doing that work for a certain period of time. But then a fellow who I had as a supervisor for a while asked me to go see a particular student because he knew I played the guitar. He said, this guy has been a singer his whole life. He's been a chorister in his church. He's done all sorts of things, but he's missing music right now. Could you go and see him? And this supervisor I had, he's a bit sly. He loves to, as Norm put it earlier, he loves to just sort of slide you out of your envelope and then let you work with that. So he sent me up to this gentleman. And it's fine, I knew what I was doing. Go on up there. Come to find out that the patient was completely nonverbal and mostly couldn't move. Could only communicate through the gestures of the eyes and the occasional smile. I found that intimidating. I'm, as you can tell, a very verbal guy. I reason through words, I reason through discussion, I reason through doing this sort of thing right here. And so, when I can't get words back, I start to freak out a little bit. And so, I came into that room full of what the Greeks would call storge, right? I'm going to go with this. And that was all I could get to. I couldn't forge a connection with this guy for love nor money. And so I sat there and I tried to, you know, play a couple of hymns and do a prayer. Nothing. It was flat. It was nothing. And so I went away very troubled. And I tried my best, unconsciously, to find all sorts of ways to not be able to get back to that room to see that person for a while. And eventually I ran out of excuses and I had to go back. So this guy was there. And I went in feeling very nervous, had my guitar with me, set it down. I said, okay, we're going to do the things. And I said, so I'm going to move my chair in front of you, because I thought maybe that was what didn't work the last time. I was over here and the gentleman couldn't turn. Maybe that was what it was. So he gives me a little blink. Okay, fine, move the chair. I started to move the chair. And then he looks at me and makes it so I catch his eye and he goes, you mean over here a little bit? Okay. And then he catches my eye again and goes, oh, over here a little bit. 2.5 minutes later, moving this chair around the room, did I start to realize he was messing with me. He got it really fast. He was trying to figure out how long he could keep this hula wag happy dance going on in front of him, right? So, I eventually, my face went slightly red. I say, I see, you've got me. And he gave me this little smile. And so I sat down and I grabbed the guitar and I asked him if he liked this hymn or that hymn and we tried it. And after that, he forged a relationship with me that I was totally unequipped to forge with him. And that person demonstrated a kind of patience and forbearance and a, well, sort of cheeky love of my learning what was going on that brought a lot out in our encounters. We were able finally for a long while to simply sit silently together after we played some music and just repose in each other's presence. And it was a beautiful feeling, don't get me wrong. I mean, it really felt great right in here. It's the kind of thing you come out of and you just take deep breaths after doing it. But the thing that was better than the feeling was knowing that a real thing existed and it happened, an event that was conjured between the two of us. That didn't have to have happened. It didn't have to have happened that way. But the beauty of it, the sort of painful, tender beauty of it, involved in all sorts of ways that we couldn't meet, all sorts of things like that as well. Little pain in the middle of those pains. But made something that was too good to deny and too special not to keep working at. Even when I kept, you know, because often when I came out of the room again, I think, okay, that was great. And then the next day when I thought about going back, I think, because that initial nervousness never quite went away, you know. But each time I went in, I felt like I was the guy standing under the arch going, okay, have we still got this all together? Because we both knew it was worth it. And it was a wonderful thing. And I'm glad I can carry it around to illustrate this point with it. It doesn't have to be big stuff that we're talking about when we say that love is more than a feeling and love is a practice. But that training we get with those gift situations to practice opening up toward the other person, letting their reality and their truth, their life come over us, is part of what I think we all seek deep down. I just want to finish with one other short illustration that's a bit closer to home. I arrived here a little early this morning. I have a certain tendency to be a few minutes early if I possibly can. And Katie and Simon had to run an errand, so they dropped me off and they went. So I was standing there, and it was chillier than I thought it was going to be on the front porch. So I was standing there for a few minutes, and we're all normal, show up soon. That's fine. But the first person to show up wasn't Norm, it was a gentleman walking up the street. And this person goes up and says, "The one morning I forget my key." And we fell to talking. And by the time that Norm arrived, I was already inside, not physically, but I was already inside the space, I was already inside this group, I was already inside the event. It was a wonderful, I think completely unaffected, totally natural, totally intuitive welcome. And so I just wanted to thank you particularly and all of you for that, for welcoming me in. And it really feels right what you're doing here. And it comes out. So thank you.